I know there's a switch down here somewhere. Up to the right. Behind the door. There it is. Alright. Gary, first of all, I did the best I could with Gary. How's that? You only can get one and do what you can do. No, I'm kidding. Gary does have a special place in my heart as well over the years. Like I said, here we are. We blanked and we're done, and it's just hard to imagine sometimes how the imperfectness of time that Adam talked about. How when we want it to last, it doesn't, and when we don't want it to last, it does. But it still keeps moving on, and you know, I want to. My goal with the whole purpose point was just to make Trish's job back and forth and back and forth. So I think that what I'll do is I'll wander around a little bit just to make it hard for her, because everybody needs a hobby. Now, can you hear me? All right. Well, once again, here we are. I noticed you had me follow up the Ashtonator and Zane Man. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. What's really funny, though, is that later on, if anybody watches this online and they're going, who's the Ashtonator? Because I'll cut off the front and the end and go, who's the Ashtonator and Zane Man? But now it's going to live in infamy. But anyway, so yeah, I do have some thoughts. I hope to be challenging you. I hope to be encouraging. Hope to do a lot of things, actually. But I want to just remind us, you know, I'm gonna butcher Solomon's quote. But there is a time to gather together, and there is a time to disperse. We have gathered together, but this is not where we're supposed to be forever. We're going to be dispersing in the next few days, because we have places to go. We have people to influence, and we have things that are ours to do. I mean, they're not done in this room alone. So that's just, I want to throw that out there. But let's just jump in and see where we go. I'm going to start off in Daniel chapter 3. I'm going to start with a story that most folks know, and hopefully just dig into it and enjoy and see where it takes us. I do have some thoughts that I would like to communicate. Third chapter of Daniel, and if you're turning there, that's fine. You're going to start recognizing things and going, I know what he's going to talk about. This isn't rocket surgery. This is simple. But I'm going to start with verse 19. Kind of jump right in the middle of the story. It says, then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1/7 times more than it was wont to be heat. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats and their hosen and their hats and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound, into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Everybody is mostly familiar with the story, right? This is not anything new. But I find that there are so many reasons why God places the record of these events for us today. It's not just about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because it's for us to put ourselves in that place. What do you think they were expecting to happen? Expect to die, right? That would be the typical thing to have happen. You know, in our modern world, I guess, we don't really toss a lot of people into fiery furnaces anymore. In our modern experience, it would be if you're walking down the street or you're in the store or at the bank and someone goes to rob the place and they put a gun to your head. What are you expecting to happen? And that's what I want to talk about. What do you believe in that moment? Because all of a sudden, life gets very, very simple in that moment, right? Everything gets real. Death all of a sudden, we don't like to think about death, but all of a sudden death is very real. And you know, it's funny how suddenly everything else doesn't really matter. Nothing else matters except for this imminent danger, this imminent threat that we are looking at. The barrel of the gun, whatever it is. But put yourself there. Put yourself there so that you can feel those same emotions and those same experiences. You know, like I jumped right in the middle of that story. So I'm going to back up, verse 8, just to get the whole context of it. It says, "Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near." And this is, so I'm not going to go all the way back to the beginning of the chapter just because of time. But you know, this king Nebuchadnezzar, he had issues. He thought enough of himself to build this giant gold statue. Anybody that builds a giant gold statue 90 feet tall has issues. But he does. And then he tells everybody, you know what? When you hear the music, you got to worship it. And what did Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego do? Nope. They wouldn't do it. So, going back to verse 8, it says, "Wherefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, etc. I'm not going to go through all of them. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee and served not thy gods, nor worshipped the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I had made, well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee. in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. That's the context. I think we know this story, but put yourself there. How did they do it? How did they have that kind of courage? How, you know, where do you have to go to in your mind to have that kind of courage to do that? You know, I had a PowerPoint, and technology is as useful as ever. So actually I had a picture of a fiery furnace, naturally, because we're talking about a fiery furnace. You know, I've had the pleasure of experiencing a fiery furnace. That's what we do. Done it dozens of times. It's we prepare for it. It's part of our training. It's a flashover chamber. And the thing about it is, I've taken dozens and dozens of recruits into this metal box that is just ripping fire. But we never, you know, it's almost a rite of passage, almost. But we never take anybody into that without teaching them how to do it. That's what I want to do today. I want to teach you how to face a fiery furnace. I think we recognize the day we live in. We're going to face fiery furnaces. We're going to face difficulties, and we're going to face challenges, and we have to know how to do that. And that's all I want to do. And these, our fiery furnaces aren't going to be a literal fiery furnace. It'll be a situation at work. You have to decide what you're going to do. It'll be a problem with your health. But all of a sudden, you are facing your own mortality. It'll be a relationship difficulty. Family, marriage, something. It will be a fiery furnace. For our brother Gary, being pastor can be a fiery furnace. Because you can never make everybody happy. That's the reality. We are going to face fiery furnaces, and we're not going to face them just once. We need to know how to face them. So, how do we do that? Glad you asked. I got some ideas. Well, let's look at these guys. How did they do it? So, what we know about the history of these three guys? They were young people, probably teenagers, hanging out in Jerusalem, living life. They were probably educated. They were the best, the cream of the crop, if you will. And then they get taken captive and carried off hundreds of miles to someplace else. Away from the family, away from everything that they've ever known in their entire life, is gone. They are alone, except for each other. Flipping back to the first chapter of Daniel. And I'll just pick up in verse 3. It says, "And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. And among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." So not only are they taken from their families, they're taken from their homes, their identities are taken away. They're given Babylonian names. Names that glorify Baal. You know, everything's taken from them. You know, I do want to acknowledge, I'm talking about fiery furnaces. It is natural for us, for human beings, to want to avoid pain. It's natural for us to avoid any kind of discomfort. That's our human nature. I get it. It doesn't make it something we don't talk about, but it's something we kind of go, I don't want to think about it. And I get it, it's natural. But I want to focus on the word natural. It's natural for us to do that. What does Mosiah say about the natural man? The natural man is an enemy to God. Those things that come to us naturally, sometimes those are the things that will destroy us. We have to overcome that. Just consider that. So, these four guys, you know, it's one of those things. Daniel's not in the third chapter. He's not around the fiery furnace. Nobody knows where Daniel is. He could be out doing some job the king told him to do. He's just not around. We just don't know. But these three guys, we know. But they were together. So what did they do? And did they prepare? Did they get ready to face this fiery furnace when they're standing before the king? No. Years and years ahead of time. So, continuing on, verse 8 of the first chapter. The first thing that we can do to get ready for a fiery furnace. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king." Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, says, "Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink." And the rest of the story is, you know, they try it, and he proves it, and God rewards that. So, instead of steak, well, I don't know about steak, instead of bacon, because they couldn't have bacon, instead of cake, instead of all of the dainty things of life, they had pulse. They got beans. Beans. And then lentils. And then peas. And then more beans, legumes of different sorts. Boy, that sounds exciting, doesn't it? But what were they doing? They had been taken from their home, taken from their heritage, taken from their, had their name taken from them, but they were holding on to what they knew. They knew that there were certain things that they could not eat and drink. And they were saying, don't make us do that. It was simple obedience. Simple obedience can change the whole trajectory of your life. This is, again, this is not rocket surgery. This is simple things that they knew that they were supposed to do. Simple things. Doesn't mean it was easy. But again, it's not rocket surgery. It's simple. It's simply doing what God asks. And that is the first thing that we do to make us ready to face the fiery furnace. Already have that, you know, I like the way that he puts it, that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He decided on the innermost part of him that says, I am not going to do something that's going to destroy my soul. I'm going to do what God told me to do, no matter what. You know, at the end of this, you know, they were blessed. They looked better than all the rest of them, because they probably ended up eating better than the rest of them. It was actually probably healthier for them than whatever the king was giving them. But the big thing was, it was because God recognized their desire, just simply obeying, just simply doing what God asked them to do. Without arguing about it, without fighting about it, but just doing it. Simple things. How do we apply that to us? The simple things of the gospel. The way we treat each other. The way we're supposed to live. The things we're supposed to do. The things we aren't supposed to do. Getting together. Worshiping Him. Praising Him. Standing as a witness at all times, just so simple things that change us. Simple obedience is what just the trajectory of our life just changes. It's like I said, it's simple. But sometimes following Jesus is the hardest thing in the world to do. Especially in social circles, at work, at school. Places where it's not popular. I want to turn over to Mark chapter 8. I'll start with verse 34. It says, when he had called his people unto him with his disciples, also he said unto them, whosoever will come unto me, come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Denying yourself, that's hard. We want what we want. It's hard to deny what we want. To deny our own will. I get it. But because something's hard, does that mean we're not supposed to do it? No. God makes us or asks us to do hard things all the time. Do parents ask their children to do hard things? I hope so. Why? Because they hate them? No. They love them. They know that they need to know how to do something. So they ask them to do a hard thing. Something that's a little bit more than they can handle. Because that's the only way we grow. Simple obedience. You know, I'm not going to read it, but if you remember back in Daniel, after all of those events, I didn't even read the second chapter. What the second chapter is when Nebuchadnezzar, again, this guy with issues, has this dream, and then he tells him, I want you to tell me what the dream means. But I'm not going to tell you the dream. I want you to tell me what the dream was. And Daniel, he goes to his three friends. He goes to Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. He says, this is what's going on. I need your help. And that's the other thing about facing this fiery furnace is we don't have to face it alone. Look around. There are people everywhere in this room that love you. That would do anything for you. There are people in this room that would take the clothes off their own kid and give it to somebody else. I'm not saying who. That's love. We don't have to face it alone. It's the adversary that tells us, hey, you're on your own. You got to do this by yourself. Why we are together. So we don't have to do it alone. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 10. Verse 23 says, let us hold fast the profession of our hope without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. It is so important to be together and provoke each other. Use a cattle prod in each other. No. But encourage them. You know, encourage to love. Encourage to do better. Help each other. Be there for each other when we're facing that fiery furnace. You don't have to face it alone. Something else to prepare us for. To teach us how to face this fiery furnace. I'm going to turn over to Alma chapter 3. Alma chapter 3, and I'm going to start with verse 8. If you're in your books, it's on page 313. If you're not in your books, it's still on page 313. It says, and now behold, I say unto you, my brethren, you that belong to this church, have you sufficiently retained the remembrance of the captivity of your fathers? And he's going back. And do you remember what happened to your fathers? How they were captives. They were put under burdens and given tasks and toils to do. And then God heard their prayers. And he delivered them. He's saying, do you remember that? He says, yea, have you sufficiently retained remembrance his mercy and longsuffering towards them? And moreover, have you sufficiently retained in remembrance that he has delivered their souls from hell? Behold, he changed their hearts. He changed their hearts. Yea, he awaked them out of a deep sleep, and they awoke unto God. How did he change their hearts? They were in bondage. That's how he changed their hearts. Behold, they were in the midst of darkness. Nevertheless, their souls were illuminated by the light of the everlasting word. Yea, they were encircled about by the bands of death and the chains of hell, and an everlasting destruction did await them. And now I ask of you, my brethren, were they destroyed? Behold, I say unto you, nay, they were not. And again I ask, were the bands of death broken and the chains of hell which encircled them about, were they loosed? I say unto you, yea, they were loosed. And their souls did expand, and they did sing redeeming love. And I say unto you that they are saved. Now I ask of you, on what conditions are they saved? Yea, what grounds had they to hope for salvation? What is the cause of their being loosed from the bands of death? Yea, and also the chains of hell. And says, behold, I can tell you. Did not my father Alma believe in the words which were delivered by the mouth of Abinadi? And was he not a holy prophet? Did he not speak the words of God, and my father Alma believed them? According to his faith, there was a mighty change wrought on his heart. A mighty change wrought on his heart. Behold, I say unto you that this is all true. And behold, he preached the word unto your fathers, and a mighty change was also wrought in their hearts. And they humbled themselves and trusted and put their trust in the true and living God. And behold, they were faithful unto the end, therefore they were saved. I want to stop there for a second. This mighty change in their hearts, and they humbled and trusted God. That is how we face a fiery furnace. This mighty change in our hearts. Now behold, I ask of you, my brethren of the church, have you spiritually been born of God? Born of God, that's kind of a weird way of talking. So, I love how the scriptures use phrases and things that we can relate to. Born of God. What does that mean? Who here was born? Okay, good. Nobody hatched? Everybody was born. Everybody remember that day, right? No? You don't? You remember what it was like before you were born, though, right? No? Let me ask you. What did you breathe before you were born? I know there's enough nurses and medics in this room that they're going to keep me honest. You breathe liquid, right? You're actually, your muscles in your chest are learning how to breathe by breathing liquid. What did you eat? Whatever mom had. But did you even eat it? Nope. You absorbed it. What did you see? Did you look out the window? Nobody looked out the window? Nope. Being born is an incredible event in a physiological sense. There, the number of things that happen to this little creature in a few moments and then in a few days is incredible. Because we go from breathing water, or not water, but liquid, to breathing air like that. Our entire life is changed. All of a sudden, now we're breathing air. Guess what we can do now? We can make noise. You can't make noise when you're breathing a liquid. And you know what's really incredible? There are vessels, blood vessels, that are around your heart that clamp off. And there is a hole in your heart that begins to close the moment you are born. There is a mighty change in your physiological heart. And that's exactly what he's talking about here. There is a change in us. And I know we use the term born of God often to say, well, I'm baptized. It's got nothing to do with it. He's not talking about these people being baptized right now. Alma has, you know, experienced this incredible event where he was in a coma for 3 days and he wakes up and he's born of God. It had nothing to do with baptism. It's about us letting God change our heart so we think differently. We act differently because we are different. That's the mighty change that happens in our hearts. That's how we face a fiery furnace, because we're different inside. It's incredible. It's amazing. But we have to let God change our heart, because we can sure resist it. He can sit there and knock on the door. He can send his spirit. It can touch us and it can try to change us and see the things in our life we need to change. And we can say, nah, I don't wanna. And then when we say, okay, God, you're the boss, and he changes us, that's how we face a fiery furnace, because we're different. He's not done. Doesn't happen just once. Happens over and over again. And it talks about how they humbled themselves and put their trust in the true and living God. All right, I'm making Trisha's job hard. I'm going to come over here. Remember, that's my hobby. That, and I wanted to say something I didn't want to say across the pulpit, because it's going to be difficult. All right. So, what happens if we say, all right, God, you step aside. God, you sit down. I'm going to handle this. Anybody else uncomfortable right now, waiting for the thunderbolt? What happens when we don't put our trust in God? We're doing exactly the same thing. We're saying, no, 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 God, you don't understand. I need to worry about this. I need to solve this problem. I need to figure this out. You need to step back. That is not trusting God. But it's so easy for us to do that. How many times we use the phrase, okay, Jesus, take the wheel. We want him to be in control, and then we reach right back over and grab it again. When we truly trust God, do we trust him with 90% of our life? Is that good enough? It's an A. I mean, it's a low A, but it's an A, right? Or does that mean we're not really trusting God? It means we're not really trusting God. You can't face a fiery furnace and not trust God. It's like you're facing death, facing that gun barrel. What do you really believe? Do you believe that there's a resurrection? Okay. What does that mean? What happens when you die? It means you're not dead. It means you just changed. That's the reality. If you truly believe in the resurrection, what's death? It's nothing. What really matters? Getting back into Alma, picking up in verse 28, it says, have you received his image in your countenances? Have you experienced this mighty change in your hearts? Do you exercise faith in the redemption of him who created you? Do you look forward with an eye of faith and view this mortal body raised in immortality? And this corruption raised in incorruption to stand before God to be judged according to the deeds which have been done in the mortal body. Do you have that view? Do you look forward to that? Do you look at that and say, this is temporary anyway. It's not about right now. This is so much bigger. Having that trust, that eternal view of life is how we face a fiery furnace, because the fiery furnace is just nothing. There is something so much more. Back into Hebrews in the 12th chapter. As we all know, the 11th chapter is the Hall of Fame of Faith, right? And all these guys and women, men and women who did these great things and just are examples. And then in chapter 12, verse 1, it says, Wherefore? Because of all the things he just got done telling us about it in chapter 11, it says, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So here we are, we're looking at Jesus. He's the one who is the one who's doing the work in us. You know, it's an interesting thing. We know the story of Jesus, right? Standing before Pilate. Do you ever look at had that mental image in your head? What would that look like? I had a picture. If somebody was there, But you can imagine, here's Pilate, probably sitting on a throne of some sort. Clean, fancy robes, got all these Roman guards around him. What does he represent? He represents the most powerful nation on earth. And there's Jesus. He's been beaten. It's in rags, probably. Probably in chains or tied up somehow. I can only imagine. Looking from the outside, who appears to be in control? Who appears to be in control? Pilate. He's got all the force of the Roman Empire behind him. He's the one that's asking the questions. He's the one that's demanding the answers. He's the one that's in charge. Who's really in control the whole time? Christ is in control the whole time. He could have done whatever he wanted. He had all the power in the world. He chose not to use it. You know, that's the essence of meekness. He had tremendous strength, but he didn't use it because it didn't accomplish what he wanted it to do. When we're facing our fiery furnace, we look at that, whatever that trial is, that fiery furnace, and we think that has control. It's just an illusion. It isn't. God is in control. He is the one that's doing everything. Do you trust Him? That's where we have to be, is in that trust. Again, I get it. It's not natural. It's not natural for us to look forward to or want to experience pain or discomfort or anything else. We just don't want to. But do you trust what He says? Do you trust that you are forgiven? Do you? He said that when you ask forgiveness, you're forgiven. When we repent, that promises, does it say how often are we supposed to, is there a limit to how many times we can repent? If there is, someone tell me what it is. I haven't seen it. Did you really trust that God has forgiven you? If God has forgiven you, what do you have to fear? Nothing. Do you trust that God's going to take care of you? He promised He would. Do you trust that God loves you? I hope so. He does. But trusting Him, putting all of our trust in Him, is how we face a fiery furnace. All of a sudden, the fiery furnace is just a campfire. It's no big deal. There's something so much bigger. Something else for us to do to prepare to face this fiery furnace is found in Matthew chapter 22. Again, it's nothing new. It's not rocket surgery. Starting with verse 34, it says, "But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. Has anybody never heard that before? I doubt it. But what? You notice it doesn't say just believe in God. It says to love Him. It's funny how Brian was talking the other night. Because in my notes I got having a passion for God. A passion. A love that consumes us. Because if you think about it, really, if you think about it, what's He done that's worthy of our love, really? Anything you can think of? He's done everything. He laid down His life for you. And if that doesn't touch your heart and change the way you think, that here is this being that loved me enough to sacrifice Himself. I just want to love Him. That's the way we respond to His love, is to love Him and love the people around us. But love isn't just something we experience. Love is a choice we make, that we respond to God's love. When we respond to God's love by loving Him, that's what He's desiring us to do. We have a choice in the matter. He doesn't force us to do anything. He loves us just because He loves us. It's up to us to respond in love. To respond and say, okay, God, You're the boss. I know You love me. And I want to love You with everything I got. Because of what You did. If He laid down His life for you, would you lay down your life for Him? Would you lay down your job for Him? Would you lay down your comfort for Him? Because He laid down all those things for you. That's how we face a fiery furnace, is because we love Him so much. We have a passion for Him. He's what we think about. He's what motivates us. He's what gets us up in the morning and enables us to do whatever He asks us to do. That's the kind of passion that He desires. If there's a group of people having a Bible study somewhere, I want to be there because they're talking about God. If there's a church service somewhere, I want to be there because they're going to be talking about God. And I want to be there. I love Him so much. That's the passion that He desires us to have. He doesn't want us to live a life that's just bleh. He wants us to live a life that is full of passion for Him. Because when we are full of passion for Him, we find ourselves loving each other. And life is so rich and full and blessed. But that's not the only thing love does. I want to turn over to 1 John chapter 4. Start with verse 17. I could read more, but just to get to the gist of it, it says, "Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. That we may have boldness in the day of our fiery furnace. That we may have confidence and courage in whatever trial we're going through. Herein is our love made perfect. That we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as He is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love Him because He first loved us." You know, that word perfect is kind of an interesting word. The Greek means it's complete. And if you think about it, this circle, the love that God sends to us, when we respond in love towards Him, that circle is complete. That love is perfect. And there is no fear. What did the three guys say to Nebuchadnezzar? "We're not afraid. If God protects us, fine. If not, we're still not going to do what you ask us to do, because it goes against our God." When we cannot live in fear when we're full of His love, because it changes us. There's no reason. There's nothing to fear. And that's how we face that fiery furnace. You know, like I said, I get it. I talk about some difficult things, and it's uncomfortable sometimes. It's unnatural to desire a fiery furnace. But I want to remind you of a couple of things. 103rd Psalm, verses 13 and 14 says, "Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear Him. For He knoweth our frame. He remembereth that we are dust." He knows how weak we are. Are we going to, every time we face a trial, every time we're going to face this fiery furnace, whatever this fiery furnace is in your life, Are we gonna meet it every time the right way? Or are there going to be times we're going to fall flat on our face? If you're like me, you're going to fall flat on your face every once in a while. The important thing is we get back up, and the next time we do better. Again, we have a God who is merciful. He knows how weak we are. He knows how hard it is to deny ourselves. And He's on your side. He wants you to succeed. And when we fail, He wants us to get back up and keep going. Don't ever forget that. Don't ever think that, "Oh, I messed up. My life is over." No. Are you still breathing in and out? Yeah, then you're still got a chance. Let God work in you. Let Him change your heart. Let Him change your life. Let Him change the way you look at life. The other thing I want to remind you of is in back in 1 Peter now. Chapter 1. I'll start with verse 3. It says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to His abundant mercy hath begotten us again into a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." Born again, we're different because of that hope, because of the truth and the reality of the resurrection. "To an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you." Again, it's like Alma was saying, do you look at that and do you see that future that's waiting for you? Is that what animates you? Is that what gives you passion? Because you're willing to do whatever God wants you to do because of what He's done and given you that opportunity. "Who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time." That it's God working in you. It's not your own ability. It's God working in you that's enabling you to do whatever He asks you to do, to face whatever you have to face. It says, "Wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold which perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, in whom though now ye see Him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls." We look at this fiery furnace as this terrible thing. But I want to remind you of something. You need it. I need it. We all need it. Because what does that fiery furnace do? The fiery furnace is what purifies us. Because we're human beings. You know what that means? We are lazy. We're not going to do anything unless we're uncomfortable enough to do it. How else can you explain the remote control on the TV? I just can't get up off the couch to go change the channel. Our human nature is to be lazy. But when we're in that fiery furnace and He's melting us, what is He doing? He's taking out the impurities. If we don't go into that fiery furnace, those impurities are not removed from us. Do you realize that? We have to go through that. We need a fiery furnace in our life. Doesn't mean I want you to run out and run and find a fiery furnace and jump in. That's not what. It's going to come. What I want you to do is welcome it and see what God is doing. Getting back to those three guys, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. What happened when they got thrown in? Right? And, well, I'll leave it. I won't try to make it up. probably know it already. Why we need a fiery furnace. Verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes and governors and captains and king's counselors being gathered together saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed upon them. We'll stop there for a second. There's two huge things that are here. In what condition were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into the fiery furnace? They were bound. The only thing that was destroyed in that fiery furnace were the things that bound them. Think about that. What are the things that bind us? Sins, addictions, our thoughts, our attitudes, our fears, all those things that bind us and keep us from doing what God wants us to do. That is the only thing that was destroyed in the fiery furnace. We need a fiery furnace to burn those things off of us, to make us free, to do those things that that God's called us to do. Welcome that fiery furnace for what it is. It's God's mercy. He wants to free us. He wants to free us from those things that bind us down, that take away our joy, that make us fearful, whatever it is. He wants us to experience His presence. Because that's the other thing. In that fiery furnace is where God is. God was with them. They weren't alone. God was with them. And you know, there's something else. Who was around them when they came out? All the people that were looking at them and going, how? We need that fiery furnace that there's people, because there's people around us that need to see us come through that fiery furnace. They need to see us changed. They need to see us having joy and experiencing God. You know, that's really what I want to talk about. I want to leave you with. Like I said, we spent some time gathered together, and now we're going to go different places, and we're going to go, we've got things to do and places to go. We're going to disperse. But I want you to go in courage. Go in confidence. Go out into the world expecting a fiery furnace and just saying, okay, welcome. I understand its purpose. I want us to walk in confidence in this world. Because we serve a God who's already victorious. Have passion. Love Him with all of your heart. And because when you love Him with all of your heart, there is no fear. No matter what the future holds, no matter who tries, what news is trying to scare you. That's how you face a fiery furnace. Thank you for your time.